quality menu planning with choice. If you get the menu right, you can actually solve a lot of issues pretty quickly.
Welcome to the Aged Care Executive Podcast, the show that's dedicated to helping age and community care professionals stay ahead of the industry.
Welcome to another episode of the Aged Care Executive Podcast. Now, we all know food is important. For many residents in aged care, it's a highlight and focus of their day. And you don't need to be a dietitian to know that if you don't eat well, you don't feel good. Food provides us the fuel that supports so many other functions: our healing, our mood, brain function, and our overall energy. Today, we're lucky enough to have with us Dr. Karen Abbey. She has a background in aged care as a manager of food services, procurement, and also Church Resources Food Services Ambassador. She has a PhD and is a food systems specialist. Today, we chat about how quality menu planning with choice can reduce the need to deal with end user issues such as unintentional weight loss and frailty, but also reduce things like unnecessary supplement usage. It can make the organization more home-like, and even though things like no sugar or diabetic diets are no longer recommended, when is it they have a place? So I hope you enjoy our conversation with Dr. Karen Abbey. Welcome, Dr. Karen Abbey, to the Aged Care Executive Podcast.
Hi, Michael. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. So just to start off with, just so our listeners can understand a little bit about yourself and your background, can you tell us a little bit about your experience within the aged care sector in terms of all things management of nutrition and hydration?
Sure, Michael. I've been working in aged care, oh gee whiz, I'm going to show my age now, about 25 years. Okay, I had the privilege of actually being doing food services across many sectors, including the aged care sector. And I suppose what I would try and do, Michael, is always the talk. So I've actually been the clinician that's actually gone in and run the services. I've been the manager of food services, running, obviously, how you bring catering to residents. And, I mean, obviously, I spent a great deal of my PhD looking at services and different types of how people are putting their services together to support residents in their nutrition and hydration. And I suppose some of the things that I find interesting, firstly, I know the aged care standards are changing, moving over to a new format, which is exciting. However, I've got some concerns regarding what that's going to look like in terms of how malnutrition or nutrition and hydration are actually going to be addressed. Though it's encouraging to see the fact in the new standards that they're actually using the word malnutrition, which I think is good. But I have to say, I think catering and or food services in aged care is not for the faint-hearted. And, you know, firstly, I should congratulate everyone in Australia who actually takes on the role to actually deliver nutrition to residents. It's certainly difficult to cater for individuals when you're actually trying to cater for a group of people. That makes it quite challenging. But I think food services has a big role to play in how we obviously look after our residents. And I think that really does reflect upon nutrition and hydration greatly.
And you're right, it is a pretty complex interplay between all the different areas. And in your experience, what would you say are the biggest or most common issues that you see in the aged care sector related to the individual resident and the management of their nutrition and hydration?
I mean, again, I think it comes back to this concept of the finite resources that aged care are dealing with and having the time. So if you've got 120 or 150 people to look after, I mean, you've only got X amount of staff on the floor during any one meal time. And I mean, from my experience, I can say the evening meal is probably less supervised than what the lunchtime meal is. And also it's about the age of the residents as well. How are we really going to cope with the fact that they're getting frailer and the length of stay is becoming shorter? They've got probably more chronic diseases. Like, how do we really tackle those sorts of things? I mean, the menu has to do a lot of work to actually meet the needs of every single resident in terms of all their likes and dislikes. The menu has to actually then also be able to deliver texture modification. And that's, so there's all the sorts of things that food services actually have to deliver. And when you start to really pull apart and look at how that gets done, like the nitty-gritty of actually delivering those sorts of services, it actually takes time. So I think the areas, Michael, are like the time that people have got to do tasks. It's the tasks that people have to do and having enough skills to do that. And I think, you know, again, looking at how aged care functions, it's not a high-paying job. It's not an area everyone wants to work in, so it doesn't attract, you know, caliber of staff because of the way in which it's actually funded or pay-scaled. I think it's very task orientated, even though I know we're trying to move towards this, you know, you know, personal centered care. Again, you know, at the end of the day, when you get down to the nitty gritty, it really is about delivering a task or a service to a person. So again, so it's time, it's, I think it's having the resources, the finances, it's the skills of staff, it's looking at that, what the understanding means. It's actually, you know, if you have to think about it, could you care for 150 people in a day one-on-one? I mean, again, it's looking at it from that aspect in terms of what does that mean for catering and for nutrition. And I think it's then noticing what's happening in the environment, Michael. I mean, you know, at the end of the meal service, I've got some stunning photos from aged care homes where you can gather all the cups up and you put them all on a table, and this is all the fluids that were available to the residents during meal times, and like this 75% to 80% unconsumed. So therefore that's, you know, 80% of fluid that hasn't been consumed during a mealtime. So it's actually the noticing what's happening in the dining room and making sure people are actually eating enough and actually drinking enough fluid.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned about the 75% to 80% of the, you know, meals or drinks not being consumed. You're right, it is difficult catering for 150 individuals when you've got to look after a group as well. So what would you say are either the best practices or the biggest mistakes some aged care organisations make that come to mind when we're talking nutrition and hydration?
So I don't think it's really a mistake. I think what it should be looked at is actually understanding the environment better. I mean, I'll just put it out there. I'm actually a systems specialist. I have numerous qualifications when it comes to food services and nutrition. I have specialised in the area of food service systems building and understanding how that actually works. And so I think it's a systems issue. It's actually looking about the fact that these services are all about running systems. And so therefore, the area that people need to understand is how to actually run systems better. And with that comes obviously efficient management. So looking at how the interplay between like the production system, meal delivery system, the actual dining room systems, how care staff interface with their, you know, assistance kinds of systems. They're the sorts of things that actually people need to be able to understand, to be able to interpret the environment correctly so that they can then look and obviously be conscious of what actually is going on, I think is really important. So, again, I think it comes back down to the fact that a lot of people, I don't believe, really understand a lot about how systems of food services works and how they interplay and how that then interplays with actually an individual.
Okay. And, yeah, I like that systems approach to thinking rather than looking at putting out individual spot fires. So with your role as a dietitian, obviously that's a big part of what you do. It's not just about looking at the resident but addressing the whole system. You know, one thing that I've always been puzzled by is that some organisations have a lot of involvement from a dietitian, and, you know, I've come across some aged care organisations that literally never use a dietitian. Do you have any insight into why some organisations don't use someone like a dietitian?
Okay, well, I think there's a couple of areas there. Firstly, I think it kind of comes back to that I talked about how the systems function. I think also there's the, I don't think people really understand what dietitians can do. So I think there's an issue in itself in terms of how dietitians are marketed. So if you look at, say, the funding models, dietetics and other allied health professionals aren't mandatory required to go into aged care homes. You can discuss menu planning reviews and all those sorts of things and how the menu's reviewed. Again, you've got one ready for accreditation, you've done a good job. But generally speaking, so I think there's a couple of things. I think it's actually about how dietitians are actually selling themselves as well, how dietitians are actually interfacing into aged care homes, and a lot of dietitians may not have a good understanding of how to do food services. And I think to really do aged care well, you've got to be able to do the clinical kind of consultations, but also I think you've got to be able to problem solve within the food service system. And then I think you look at the aged care standards as well, about the fact that, you know, the mandatory components of what we're doing, or the mandatory components in which, I suppose, control how, like, you know, services are going to be uptaken. And then I think you just come back to finance. Again, you know, if you've got X amount of finance, then you've got to do X amount with it. You know, if you don't have to have a dietitian, then, you know, you may not want to pay for one because that's going to cost you more, where you might have been speaking to nutrition companies, for example, who make supplements, and you can give residents supplements and things. And so that kind of sort of done away with the fact that you actually think you need a dietitian. So again, it's actually about how aged care homes use specialist information or specialists to help them actually move forward. And I think you've got to have an understanding about what that actually looks like and what it actually means.
Okay. And you mentioned the, you know, the option of engaging a dietitian to look at your food services or dealing with a supplier and prescribing supplements. In your experience, have you found that the use of a dietitian can reduce the use of supplements and actually have a positive impact on the bottom line overall?
I think so, yeah, Michael. I think, you know, there's been quite a few studies done that have shown that when you bring a dietitian in, you can sometimes cut that supplement out. Now, whether or not it's a saving, you still got to pay for the actual dietitian's hours to be there, of course. You probably do save money on the bottom line in terms of supplements. But I think you can have like a nice crossover where you can actually probably neutralise out. You get a better service. You get someone who can actually obviously monitor and help with residents who probably have more chronic needs than other residents, residents who have got maybe malnutrition, residents who are on texture modification, the residents who are frailer, the ones who do actually need probably more nutrition support. But also you can probably make the menu a bit more home-like in terms of that you use food first. And I think that's a concept that I think is really important, that in aged care we use food first. And then obviously I'm not saying you should never use a nutritional supplement, but I think you should use them once you've exhausted a lot of avenues such as food first, using food fortification strategies, offering seconds at meal times, being more engaging in the dining room and actually observing what's actually happening with residents, making sure they're eating their meals, and also looking at your menu planning to make sure you're putting on foods and meal items which are really resonating with what the resident wants. They're yummy, they've got lots of taste, you know, full of obviously, you know, lots of nutrients, and obviously residents have choice. And when residents get choice, they actually predominantly will probably eat more for you anyway. So I think a dietitian can really, really help get homes thinking more along the choice options, more along the food fortification options. So you may not save a lot of money, but you certainly, I think, will get a better outcome and you'll get more focused on the residents. And you move away from the fact that, you know, it's his little Tetra pack of something that you're going to drink, whereas here's a nice yummy milkshake, or here's a cake that's actually been made or fortified, or, you know, just even giving people more foods that they actually like. And we move away from the fact that, you know, everything's oscillating around a supplement, which has got to be more home-like and personalised service in the long run. And I think dietitians really have a role to play in being able to deliver services such as that to aged care homes.
And with the supplements, and you mentioned, you know, providing a Tetra Pak. Now, obviously, there's lots of different supplements in the market, you know, not mentioning names specifically, but what are your thoughts on, you know, staff that don't have any specific training in, you know, nutrition and hydration, just arbitrarily saying, yep, someone's lost X number of kilos, they've got unintentional weight loss, let's put them on, say, Ensure, because that's what we have in our cupboard?
Look, I mean, I think there's a couple of areas there, Michael. Firstly, if you've got a resident who's actually lost weight, I mean, you certainly don't want to wait around to get your referral to your dietitian. So if you've got a dietitian coming to you, you probably should have some strategies worked out with the dietitian to say that here's the plan, what happens in the interim before the next visit. So that's what happens. So the resident's immediately supported. I think that's always important. If you don't obviously engage a dietetic service, then, you know, really at the end of the day, is it really effective? Is it going to be the best fit for the resident? So I think there's two things. Firstly, if you've got a dietitian, I think starting them on something on a pre-approved program that the dietitian has worked out and left in the home so that they can start it is actually really, really good. The second thing is then you then need to go and talk to the resident, like get staff to go and talk to the resident about the strategies and foods the resident feels like eating. So that can happen as well. And that information should be collected and reviewed, obviously, at some stage when the dietitian visits. If you don't have the dietitian, though, at the end of the day, you know, as I said, are you getting the best outcome for the resident? How are you checking? I mean, you can still do things like check the menu and offer extra foods and things like that, but necessarily doesn't actually mean that you're going to get the outcome you want. You may or you may not. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, residents who are really malnourished, residents who are really frail, nutritionally compromised, you know, should be being seen by a dietitian so that, you know, obviously the other parameters that are being worked out, which dietitians are skilled to do, can actually be, you know, taken into consideration and the residents getting the best level of care.
Okay, and so is there a lot of similarities between the different supplements on the market and it's just a case of choice and about resident preference, or do they actually have quite similar qualities in terms of the nutrients that they provide and the issues that they address?
So again, there's nothing wrong with using supplements. I just think it's about the fact that, you know, that's kind of like I always thought, like that's the big gun. You bring that in right at the end. You try a whole pile of other strategies first. But yeah, in terms of what they offer, look, they have some differences. They have obviously different levels of some of the macro and micronutrients. And again, I think it comes back to taste and preference, how easy they're used to cook with, if you're using them to fortify. It's those sorts of things. And of course, you know, if you've had success with some supplements in your aged care home, then I mean, you know, you're probably not, pretty reluctant to go and try something different. However, it's always good, I think, to have a look. And again, this is where a dietitian can help. If you do have to have those sorts of things, getting the advice from a dietitian so you can actually match and get the correct supplement. If you do need to give people Tetra Paks and stuff because, you know, they're really frailing out or failing and they just need that a little bit more superior nutrition. They're so small eaters and they're not eating a lot. I mean, those when supplements really come to the forefront in terms of the fact that they're a small volume and they pack a real punch. But, yeah, I think, you know, again, it comes back to the fact that, you know, if you're doing that sort of stuff, you really probably should be in consultation with a dietitian and they're supporting you to make sure the resident, again, is getting the best level of care.
Okay, great. So it sounds like that the supplements do have their place, but after, you know, as a last line of defence, after you've tried some of the, you know, sometimes cheaper and more cost-effective strategies.
Well, that's right, because I think that's, again, you want to, a supplement's not really what I consider home-like kind of food. A supplement, you know, is kind of like something, as I said. But, I mean, you want to try some of the homey strategy because sometimes it could be the easiest thing, like adding cream to something, or it could be, you know, making sure the resident gets a little bit of extra, or they tell you themselves that they really feel like right now eating chicken noodle soup and they'd like some bread or they'd like honey sandwiches or something. And you can actually just get on with it and actually feed them the sorts of things that they're really interested in. However, if there's been a large amount of weight loss or a resident's come into a home and fairly malnourished, I mean, you know, sometimes you just do need to help the resident along a little bit. But again, it comes back to how the resident's being assessed, how the resident's being screened and assessed by a dietitian. And that's when I think, you know, you need to have those conversations with the specialist dietitian to say, look, what's going to be the best course of action? And, you know, and so therefore there's a plan around the person, not just an ad hoc, oh, we'll just throw them a supplement because, you know, they're here and we can give it to them, that sort of stuff. I mean, those sort of things I think you need plans for.
And that sounds really good. And I guess that's in conjunction with what you were talking about before, having a pre-approved program where you know what to do as the, you know, what's the initial frontline management before you can get the specialist dietitian involved.
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, you know, unless you've got a dietitian working for you full time, Michael, every day of the week, then I think sometimes working with your dietetic team or your dietitian to actually put in place some sort of pre-approved, you know, nutritional kind of triage system, if you want to use those words, so that if you do have residents being coming into the home and you think that they might be a little bit underweight, you can get them started straight away. I mean, when, you know, we're talking about the elderly, sometimes they don't have a lot of fat to spare. They don't have a lot of reserves like you and I do. And so basically you want to not be mucking around. You want to be really proactive when it comes to the nutrition of the elderly. So you need to be on the ball and, you know, looking at what you can do. And then as your dietitian comes into the home, there's a referral and the dietitian can obviously reassess and obviously make the appropriate adjustments.
Lovely. And what bad advice, or is there any bad advice that you commonly hear regarding the management of nutrition and hydration of the elderly?
Look, the reality is we want to make sure things like menus are integrated. So we don't want residents on things like low-fat diets unless it's really, really, really warranted. So if we don't want things on like low-fat diets or, you know, special diabetic diets, unless the resident really requests it, what we want to try and do is integrate the menu so that everyone is getting the types of foods that everyone else is getting on the day. So it's all quality. That's what you're looking for. You want quality menu planning, quality choice, and quality delivery of food services. So again, it's actually, you know, moving away from the fact there is no such thing as a sugar-free diet unless you actually want to just have oil, meat, and water, because, you know, a lot of foods actually have carbohydrates and different types of sugars in them. So you've got to move away from that one. That doesn't really exist. I think it's actually, you know, not trying to, like, you know, you don't want to just be reactional with residents. Again, it's actually about trying to move away from some of the myths, which I've talked about, like the low-fat myth and the diet, the sugar-free myths. Again, they're not really helpful. We're trying to move away from a highly institutionalised kind of diets into something that's a bit more liberalised so that residents can, you know, choose freely and make sure that they're actually getting the nutrition that they need. And if they're not a great eater, sometimes giving a resident a vitamin and mineral supplement more effective and just let them eat what they actually feel like. Really looking at that food service model, coming back again to that food service system, saying, how's it being delivered? How's it being structured? Do you need more advice in the area of how to structure your food services to get the best value out of it? You know, those sorts of things. And getting the right kind of consultant to come in who actually has a background in nutrition and a background in food services and dining rooms so that you actually can get the big picture, you know, not just one or the other. Because if you start changing the food service system, it then will have impacts down with other interacting parts of that system. So I think it's really important that people really need to, I think, focus on the system and making sure that the system's actually doing what it's supposed to do, which is keeping residents well hydrated and well nutrient with lots of goodness and, you know, yummy menus.
You mentioned about the diabetic diets, and diabetic diets are no longer recommended in aged care. That's still the case?
Yes, that's still the case. If the resident requests it, though, that's their choice. It always comes back to the fact that the resident, I mean, I've been to places where the resident must have their diabetic jelly and custard every day, and that's all they eat. And, I mean, that's their choice. My question around that is saying, well, I hope they're eating a whole pile of other foods as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's, again, comes back to the fact of why you need dietitians managing people. So when you get those ones that only want party pies every night, that's fine. Let them eat them. But you might like to think there's a few other things you need to put in place to actually make sure the resident stays well.
Excellent. And just one final question. If you could have a billboard that was up at the next major aged care conference and you could have one message related to looking after residents' nutrition and hydration, what would it be?
Oh, I'd probably need 10. Okay, just one. I think quality menu planning with choice. I think that would probably, if you get the menu right, you can actually solve a lot of issues pretty quickly.
Excellent. And last but not least, Dr. Karen Abbott, where can our listeners find you and find out more about what you do?
I have actually got two websites. So www.nutcat.com.au and www.nutritioncateringhub.com.au. And they can also ring my mobile phone if they want, 0417 608 206.
Excellent. And I'll link to those in the show notes. Well, thank you very much for your time today. I've learned a lot, and hopefully all our listeners will too.
Excellent. Yes, and anyone wants to ask me a question or send me an go on the website, through the website you can actually email me, so that's no problem at all.
Thank you for listening to the Aged Care Executive Podcast. What drives us is knowing that we're providing content to help aged and community care professionals stay ahead of the industry. So please, if you get any value from what we're doing, the biggest reward we could ask is that you share this podcast with your colleagues. Don't forget to hit subscribe. It's free. And also leave us a review. 5 stars, hopefully, but if not, that's okay. But please, leave a comment and let us know what we can do better, or if there's any particular topics you'd like to hear about. If you'd like to connect with us or have any questions, you can find us on LinkedIn and Facebook at the Aged Care Executive Podcast.